Scott Pulsifer took over as president of Western Governors University in April. WGU, a nonprofit based in Utah, is a pioneer in competency-based education. Pulsifer sat down with editors and reporters from Inside Higher Ed last week to talk about what's next for the university, which enrolls about 75,000 students. Now on to the conversation.
Why don't you just maybe start by telling us what your agenda is for WGU, where you see it today, yeah. Where it's headed.
Yeah, I think, as you know, WGU is simply founded as a very student-centric model to mm-hmm. Higher education. You know, we are fundamentally very interested in advancing the learning models, degree offerings, to the competencies that are developed within those degree programs to ultimately increase the outcomes for those students that we serve. And those outcomes, we probably think about two ways. One is, ultimately, are you attaining the learning standards that we believe in and attaining the degree? But the other key outcomes I think will become a key part of our future is also making sure that the opportunity associated with that degree continues to prove out its promise. Mm-hmm. I think it's oriented in the sense that we fundamentally believe in our relationships that exist with the employers and industry representatives that are part of our degree and our councils that underpin our colleges. I think it's vitally important for us to stay connected with them as we advance and define the competencies that are required in that workforce, so that we can ensure we're always improving the quality of our offering and improving the quality of our offering being the degree programs, while also improving the student learning path so that we advance the outcomes of the students. We do know that those two elements are vitally important to increasing the quality of the degrees themselves and increasing the opportunity for the students. So that focus is still fundamentally going to be there. The one thing I will say is that part of what my efforts are is really reinvigorating that innovation-led mindset that fundamentally formed WGU. There's so many fascinating things that we can do with just the information and data we have around what the students are experiencing, how we adapt the technology experience that they utilize, the user experience, how we also advance certain constructs in our content and curriculum to advance outcomes. That innovation is going to continue to accelerate, you know, especially when we have 4,000, 5,000 plus students enrolling every term, which starts every month. And so we can innovate at a pace that is much more quickly than anyone else in higher education, in my opinion. So,
do you mind giving folks a little bit of the flavor of the work you do with employers to define what students should know and be able to do and maybe how that's changed or...
Yeah, I could probably give you, one, the model, but also a specific example of how that actually translates into real things for the students. And so across the university, we actually have 7 advisory councils. The fundamental to that is 4 that really exist within the context of our colleges. So those advisory councils are actually made up of both academic leaders as well as industry leaders. One of the core principles of competency-based education is that you're developing the competencies that are, in fact, in great need in the particular workforce areas. Those leaders from industry are helping us define those competencies. They also help us really shape what the future offering in the degrees that we offer should be within that college. And that's true across all of our colleges, the IT, Teachers College, business, and health professions. We also have our advisory council as it relates to general education. So we fundamentally do believe that the liberal education, the general education, it is fully integrated into our degree program. We also integrate industry leaders into that as well because we know that problem-solving skills, critical reasoning, communication skills, those are vitally important in the graduates in ensuring their success. We also include them in the assessments, and we have an assessment advisory council. So how are we appropriately assessing that? A good example would be specifically in our field placements, so both the clinical rotations that our nurses do as well as demonstration teaching that the teachers do. How are we incorporating assessments into that practice of the cognitive things that you're learning in the content? How do you do that also in the assessments of it in their rotations? I think that's what's led to the National Council on Teacher Quality recognizing that our teacher programs are the highest rated in the nation. Same thing with the National League of Nursing recognizing our nursing programs as center of excellence because we aren't looking at those things as just a checkbox on the learning experience. We're actually looking to see whether the competencies that you expected to be developed and learned during that practicum in fact were, and how do you assess that, and how do you incorporate the employer into that assessment with the coaches, et cetera. So those are good examples. Now, specifically in a degree, we introduced a degree this year in Masters of Integrated Healthcare Management. That resulted as a direct input from the workforce in identifying that healthcare was going a particular way around accountable care, coordinated care, that the competencies weren't there in the curriculum that existed in traditional programs, and so we introduced that specific degree offering to map to those workforce competencies. So they're pretty vital in just even designing that model.
So you mentioned that you've got 4,000 to 5,000 students starting each month.
Yeah.
It sounds like the growth has been pretty steady of late. And
yeah.
I wonder, first of all, where are you seeing new demand geographically or even program-wise?
Yeah, I think, interestingly enough, right now in the degree program offering, there continues to be, for us, I would say this is not necessarily true as far as I know across the nation. Our teachers' college is actually seeing some increase in demand now, and we think that's somewhat a function of a decade later after the kind of Great Recession, if you will, that we know the market demand is already there for teachers, but I think that the ability to actually achieve a affordable, accessible license in teaching, that has also seen some increase for us. Overall, we're seeing growth in all of our programs. So in IT college, that's somewhat a function of the fact that we've introduced new degrees in cybersecurity as well as data analytics, both a bachelor's and master's in that area. So that's led to some of the increase in the demand in the IT college. Technology is far and away probably the one of the hottest demand areas as well. Overall, I would say that that we are continuing to kind of see the same growth rate as before. So we're still kind of in that 15% to 20% growth in terms of total enrollment year over year. It's actually been a little bit stronger than that in our first quarter. The one noticeable thing this year for us has been our referral rates have gone up pretty significantly, 5 to 6 percentage points. And so, we have a pretty stable spend in terms of overall, brand building, awareness building, et cetera, but we're seeing a lot higher lead and applicant rate than we have in prior years simply because the referrals are so strong, which is good. I mean, that bodes well for the students and their assessment of their experience with WGU. That also bodes well among our employer references and referrals that exist there. And I think the quality of the graduates and the quality of the degree offering is definitely building its way into the water system, if you will. So.
Are you worried about the Ed Department's scrutiny of whether there's enough meaningful interaction between faculty members and the students?
Not at all, quite frankly. Simply because I think one thing we realize is that the interactions that have to exist to advance student outcomes have to be many and varied. And it's not just about subject matter expertise. It's also about overall program, augmented instruction and program guidance. Even around how you manage which courses you're doing in which terms and in which sequence, et cetera, to really individualize the learning outcomes for a student such that we know that in total that you actually have a higher degree of interaction between students and the faculty members than you might at a typical experience. Exactly whether or not those who are evaluating it from a different perspective see it the same way, I'm not really worried about that personally, I would say, because we're comfortable with the fact that we're innovating on behalf of students and driving the outcomes, and we're okay if it takes a while for other things to catch up to that view. So,
in looking at sort of the history of American higher education, there are institutions like, say, Antioch College that were way ahead, in their case, at co-op education.
Mm-hmm.
Then everyone else did it, and Antioch became a bit player and died and is now being revived. And you were, way ahead on competency-based education when nobody knew what it was or was doing it.
Right.
Now, University of Wisconsin's doing it, University of Texas is doing it, University of Michigan is doing it, Southern New Hampshire is doing it. Do you worry about, how does the growth of competency-based education, including in very much establishment players, affect WGU?
First of all, we actually think it's a pretty great thing because overall I think we believe that the entire system should be working to increase access, affordability, and quality of higher education. So I think overall we see it as a really good thing. What we also recognize is that not everyone's going to have the same approach to delivering fundamentally what we believe is a defined model. We do believe that competency-based education is a defined model. We do not believe that it's synonymous with online. We don't believe it's synonymous with direct assessment. We think those are takes and approaches to it that says, no, we believe a competency-based model combines the ability to identify the standards for learning and ensuring that all students meet those standards, but recognizing that you have to have the combination of great content with great engagement that's adapted and individualized to students so that each student can ultimately achieve that standard. Otherwise, if you just say, no, these are the competencies and we're just going to test you on it, then you're not really significantly improving outcomes and quality. You're mostly just increasing access, I think. That's my perspective on that. So what we do know is that many of these institutions exist. I think the number is over 600 now. They're doing some pilot or experiment with competency-based education. They're going to approach it different ways because they're starting from different points themselves. We got to start from scratch. I don't know anyone else out there who, as an existing institution, can truly start from scratch unless they so separate it that they can be very disruptive in that model. And I think one of the its beginning challenges is, can you really separate from your existing faculty model, your existing residence-based model, if that's there? Even if you have an online system, can you integrate your online content with your faculty teaching model that may exist in a residence, and can you marry those two? We didn't have any of that legacy. So it'd be interesting to see those who don't have any of that legacy. Are there new ones going to be popping up there? Or can existing ones separate it enough to where they can innovate it at the same pace? One benefit that we know that we have at WGU is our scale is an advantage. There's no doubt about that. We can do things that allow us to continue to address affordability, for example, because our lower cost of operations that we have at the scale that we're at now. We know that in terms of brand value and reputation, we're further out there on that because we are delivering and have been delivering for some time high-quality programs and graduates. So that economies of scale, or really the scale advantage, factors into the quality of the outcome, the student experience, the cost and affordability of it, that it will take some time for others to catch up. But we're okay with that because what we do know is that there's no way that WGU itself expects to educate every possible learner that's out there who needs a college degree.
Related to that, you probably saw there was a report recently by the RPK group on the business model in competency-based ed, and a lot of the other folks getting into this seem to be setting their business model on you all in terms of pricing, but they don't have the scale.
Yeah.
And I wonder, do you think you'll see kind of more different types of business models eventually emerging or not?
I think so. And it, I would say, I think of it this way, which is there's purely from kind of my previous background and my experience of kind of creating companies, being part of two startups and also creating a new business inside of Amazon, that there are kind of two key questions that you always have to start with, which is ultimately, who is the customer that you're serving? And not all of those models will serve the same customer, and therefore not all the models that are going to be the same. That's the first question. So which customer are you serving? And that, given that, what is the product you're really offering? And the product is, for us, really, we think of two. One is, it's the degree programs that we offer to students, prospective students. And then it ultimately is the graduates that we offer to the workforce. In that context, that product that you offer then is going to define the approach that you have to take, because it has to map really well to that customer. What we do know is that we primarily target the underserved in the working adult population. Those that are going to target the 18 to 24-year-olds are probably going to have to take a different approach, because the product offering itself is going to be slightly different, therefore the model in which they do it is different. Those that are going to attack the same customer as us, they may have a more of a struggle to even match our model. Even if they did it exactly, you kind of got to get to a scale to where it becomes economically viable. At Amazon, we learned to ask three questions. The third question was, is it big enough to even really serve? So if you're a smaller college that serves a kind of regionalized population of students, well, how many can you really serve in that area? And then, is competency-based going to scale effectively for it, et cetera? Second question is, well, if you do it, is it going to be really successful? Third is, if you're successful, can it be economically viable? So even if you're really large, you don't want to just be having to keep funding it. The one thing that we have unique that we take to every state where we go is that we don't require any ongoing appropriations. We are self-funded under a very low-cost tuition model. And, where you're talking average appropriations of $5,000 to $6,000 per student in a state, you're like, we don't have any of that, and so that the question I would ask for many of those starting up is, how much of a runway do you have to where you get to that economic turning point where you can be self-sustaining? And is that possible given the size of the, you know, customers that you're, the customer base that you're intending to serve? So,
shall we?
Yeah. Thanks for being here.
Yeah. So,